It's October 26, 2025, and you are on the Sunday show, the Indie B Sunday show, with me, Chris Steyn, and Rory Steyn, the former chief of security for the late President Nelson Mandela. Welcome, Rory.
Thank you, Chris. Good evening to you and to the tribe and all of our viewers. It's a great privilege to be asked to do this session with you. Thank you.
Rory, you must be watching the inquiries the Matlanga Commission and the Ad Hoc Committee in Parliament with rapt attention. May I ask you what you made of the very different performances of two former police ministers? One arrived meticulously prepared and spoke like a politician. The other one arrived and just let it all out.
Well, as a former police officer, you can imagine, Chris, how the hair on my head was standing on end, listening to, I mean, as much as you can follow the testimonies in both fora, you know, either in person while it's happening, you watch for a while, then you read a bit about it later, you watch a bit on YouTube. But the gist of what is going on there should really concern, if not terrify, the majority of South Africans, never mind the cops. So as a former police officer, I mean, I left the police in 99 with the rank of lieutenant colonel. So I only had two more ranks to go, colonel and brigadier, before I would have been a general myself. I don't regret leaving the police, and neither do I regret serving the almost 18 years that I served. But given that 17 and a half years experience at a senior level, I still didn't know the depth and the extent of the rot that has set in. Look, it has been 26 years since I left, but it surprised even me, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Now, the former police minister, the previous one, had presidential ambitions, and we've heard about that at the Matlanga Commission as well. Minister Senso Mtunu, what do you think of those ambitions now, Rory?
Well, I don't think Senso Mtunu has any ambitions left, even in a political career. I think that the testimony that was initiated by Lieutenant General Lucky Mkwanazi and now borne out by some of the other witnesses that have testified have basically put paid to certainly any presidential ambitions, surely, but even the rest of his career. Even if, you know, there was this withdrawal of some of what he said, Mkwanazi, some of what he said, but mainly in relation to former Minister Trele. By the way, I came across both of those individuals in my time with Madiba, because at the time that he was president, the ANC was not the ruling party in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And there was obviously a lot of effort being put in by the ANC leadership to win the province back from Mangosuthu Buthelezi's IFP. So I got to know both. In fact, I bumped heads with Beggy Trele because he thought that he was still in charge of Madiba's security when we went into the Midlands. And I had to remind him that he isn't. There is now a formal unit that was established without his participation that is now in charge of the president's protection. But I knew both these people. And at the time, I actually thought that Senso Mtunu was, you know, a pretty likable person. I did not have any idea that he would be involved to the extent that he now is shown to be, or potentially shown to be, in organized crime. And the fact that he is linked to the depth and the extent that he is to people like Matlala, who is, Jeff Wicks put it, what kind of a psychopath does it take to steal from a public hospital where gogos are denied treatment, where cancer patients cannot access chemotherapy, radiation therapy, and other necessary treatments because the money has been stolen? And by the way, Chris, while we're on the subject of Tembisa Hospital, I think it's high time that we began a campaign to rename that hospital. That hospital should be renamed as the Babita Deokaran Memorial Hospital. That's the very, very least we can do for that extremely brave lady who blew the whistle and paid the ultimate price, not at great risk to herself. She paid the ultimate price. And as a lot of the testimony has revealed, when these hitmen hit, they don't just shoot you once, they shoot you multiple times. And I think that that is a fitting honor. But the point is that to link a sitting police minister to that was a very brave step by Lucky Mkwanazi, number one. And number two, there is no chance that anybody with that blood on his hands could be a president of our country. I don't think so. I think that ship has sailed.
Now, when the KZN provincial commissioner held that press conference, people were shocked. People were absolutely aghast. But now it seems that that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and normally you need somebody brave enough to stand up and say what he said so that we can scratch beneath the surface. And, you know, that tip that's pointing above the sea, look what's below. And, you know, Chris, I've always said this, I'm on record, you can check, I'm not a politician. I was merely a police officer who hopefully did his job to the best of his ability through the apartheid years and into the new South Africa. And my life and my view of race and history in our country was severely changed by President Mandela. And when I look back on that and where we, you know, where we've gotten to now, it's like a dagger through the heart. I can't believe that our police have stooped to the level that they have. So I don't like politicians. I think there's fewer than what I can count on one hand that I have any time for. So I would like to look at the police's involvement in this, the criminal justice system. And Chris, I think it's time for very, very brave action. I think that, you know, I was reading a lot online in preparation, even for our interview now. Stephen Curtis makes the point that we need an intelligence service and a police service, and for that matter, a criminal justice service that is so apolitical that both Julius Malema and the Freedom Front Plus would be happy with the persons appointed to head those agencies. And I think it's time for bold action. What do I mean by that, Chris? You know, there is precedent, and Colombia is one of them. East and West Germany is another, when they merged those two bitter enemies back when the Berlin Wall fell in 89 and into the early 90s, where you actually disband the country's intelligence services completely. That's what the Colombian president did. He fired the whole lot. And in the case of East and West Germany's merge, you actually bring in an independent, somebody who's not even a South African, to reestablish an intelligence service with integrity, where there's real integrity. And I think it's even time that we consider bold enough legislation that says, if you want to be a serving police officer or a serving intelligence officer, and you can consider extending that to other branches of the civil service, then you may not belong to a political party. But then you also don't pay income tax. There is precedent for that in Scandinavia. So if you are a cop, you don't pay tax to any government. You serve the people that elected that government. And that's one of our problems, isn't it? Our government think that we serve them. That's what comes out in their behaviors, even in the attitude of the people around them. The other day I was down in Durban and happened to park my car outside a hotel where one of the ministers was arriving. And I had a mild altercation with the protection team. And they said, so the minister must park elsewhere and walk. I said, absolutely. We're not here to feign over the minister. The minister serves us, not the other way around. That's just by the by. So, Chris, are we bold enough as South Africans to take that step? Think of the political ramifications, and it'll require special legislation to say, if you want to be a cop, you want to serve in the intelligence, then you serve the government of the day, irrespective of which party it is, and irrespective of who the incumbent is. But you can't vote, and you don't pay income tax. Would that work?
Rory, that's the best plan I have heard thus far. That sounds like a real solution. But it will need political will to implement an apolitical solution.
And courage,
wouldn't it?
It will need courage, because now, right now, as the matter stands, can't happen.
Sorry.
Yes.
Talking about courage, how differently would the late President Nelson Mandela have handled this crisis than it's being handled by the current President Cyril Ramaphosa?
Well, you know, Chris, again, I'm on record as saying I have never presumed to speak for the president, and I still won't do that. But I've got I've got two ears and two eyes, and I've got a brain, and I spent 5 years serving him. So I think that he would be very angry at this current state of affairs, and knowing how he works within consensus and within the context of consultation, he would call those ministries and possibly even the, you know, the top civil servants like the directors general, or in this case, the generals of the SANDF, the senior people in our intelligence, and certainly the generals in the police, into a forum where this is thrashed out, and he in no uncertain terms would lay out what is expected. And then it's up to those people to implement. And that's, I mean, that's part of the problem. Now, imagine if we were able to achieve what I've just suggested. That would completely remove what happened with Mkunu and General Masimola, where whatever you call it, whether they were directives or instructions, those can't happen because the politician knows that those people in those positions have got absolutely zero allegiance. So he can make suggestions, but he certainly can't issue instructions or even their milder form directives, because the police commissioner has every right to just ignore that and continue leading that service with the necessary expertise that it requires.
Let's talk
about.
So
I think Madiba would have acted. I think he would have certainly have called people into a forum, a meeting, or a whatever, and he would have been very firm. And I don't think he would have been happy.
No. And let us talk about suspended Deputy Commissioner Shadrach Sibiya. His name is coming up increasingly at both inquiries, and he also had ambitions. I think he wanted to be the next National Commissioner. How do you rate his chances now?
Zero. And I think, thank God, that this commission has opened up to, you know, expose what he has said, who his connections are politically. I also read this week of the provincial commissioner in, I think it was in Mpumalanga province, a lady, a general there, who demanded gifts from the police stations that she visited. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine these cops that are holding the line, that thin blue line that stands between all of us and anarchy and the criminals out there? And now when she visits the police stations, which is part of her job, she expects those people on their salaries to buy her gifts. That is the malaise that has entered our police, Chris. So I'm not sure I have the words to express the revulsion that I feel towards the leadership of the police, and I think it's gone too far now. It's gone too far to reform it, Chris. I do not think it's possible. And just like with the Zondo Commission, and by the way, somebody made the point this week that there's nothing new here. It happened with Jackie Salibi and Glenn Agliotti. It happened with Radovan Krejcer. So all we've got is just a new bunch of organized criminals, serious gangsters linked to cops and politicians. So how is it going to change? And the only way it can change is if there are prosecutions. Now, I feel that that is also a big part of the problem, because the NPA, part of it, not all of it, part of the NPA, as we know, is compromised. There are prosecutors, magistrates, and possibly even judges that are caught up in all of what we're hearing at Madlanga and in the parliamentary hearings. So, and apart from the compromised, I don't think the NPA has the resources currently. It needs to be significantly expanded, because I don't think that until there are prosecutions, until people go to jail for this stuff, I don't think anything's going to change. Sadly, as shocked and as disillusioned and as horrified as we are, I don't think much will change, other than, of course, at the ballot box. When South Africans realize that they can no longer trust these leaders, so-called leaders, that we actually get rid of the whole shooting match, I don't think there's going to be change. But I want to leave the politics aside, even the ballot box side of politics aside. There has to be consequences. I mean, isn't that a buzzword that we've heard about consequence management? Look at Zondo. 2 billion rand spent. Where are the consequences? Who has been prosecuted? And I know it could still come. And please God, it does still come. But we need people to go to jail, Chris. And we need people to be seen to go to jail. People like these Mokhosis and Matlalas They need their assets. They're not even their assets. They need their ill-gotten wealth, the Lamborghinis and the Maybachs and the Sandhurst mansions. Those need to be removed, sold, and all that money, at least that money, given back to the hopefully to be renamed Babita Deokaran Memorial Hospital. Because until people see that, they shrug their shoulders and say, ach, it's just the way it is in South Africa. We are not that South Africans. We aren't.
Now, we've seen the Tembisa Hospital looting kingpin, the nephew by marriage, previous marriage to President Ramaphosa. We've seen his assets confiscated, but we haven't seen him arrested. People are asking,
why didn't they arrest him?
Why do they take his assets, but he's free?
Exactly. And as we saw with Molefe, they arrested him and he got bail. And the investigator was told before he got bail that he's going to get bail. Witness A? I think witness A's testimony was such that he was told the guy's going to get bail. And he got bail.
And
so
he was going
problem,
to pay.
Chris.
And apparently he was prepared to, whether he had paid it or not, 2.5 million rand to ensure that he got bail. So the first time when he didn't, he was really surprised. Why am I not getting bail?
And again, the point was made this week. That's one of the big differences between, Jackie Salibi was convicted on 120,000 rands worth of malfeasance. Now, this is billions we're talking about, 2.3 billion, I think, Tembisa Hospital. And this guy was prepared. I mean, imagine how much money he stole if he is prepared to bribe somebody to the tune of 2.5 million. It's a different scale. And if we leave it, it's only going to get worse as organized crime get their tentacles into our officials, our government agencies like intelligence and police. Where does it end, Chris? And it only ends if people go to jail and are seen to be paying for that stuff and paying back the money, to quote Malema.
Now, Katie Molefe is out on bail. This is a man linked to 18 murders. 18 murders. This is a hitman mastermind, but he's out on
bail.
And
Duval was shot, what, 20
times, I think.
Swart, excuse me. Yeah.
Yes. And he's linked to
his murder. Yeah.
His murder as well. Now, interestingly, people are pointing out that the judge who gave Molefe bail is the same judge who sealed the CR7.
So the malfeasance goes down to justices as well. Well, there you are. And you know, Chris, I am heavily on the side of our police, but I need to qualify that. You know, that thin blue line that serves all of us, they are the ones that are not being supported. And that's a generalization. But they can't be adequately supported by their commanders and all of those generals. There's far too many generals. It's been said over and over. I think when I started in the early 80s, there was only one full general, the commissioner of police, and there were, I think, two lieutenant generals and a handful of major generals. Now everybody and his dog is a general. And those people's job is to support the thin blue line on the ground who are on a daily basis confronting these criminals. And when their eye is off the ball, when they are too busy with all kinds of other things, when training budgets are reduced, then it's who suffers? It's the cop dedicated to his calling and the oath that he swore, or she swore, that suffer. So, I look at this and these guys, these brave witnesses, A, B, and C, investigating this, who are strong and courageous enough and have sufficient integrity to say, not on our watch. Those are the people that need to feel the change that is so desperately needed. Because until that happens, do we have faith in this collection of leadership, these generals at the top, to be able to prevent another July 2021 from happening? Mm. Is their eye on the ball? And you go back even to the 2010 FIFA World Cup, Chris. I served a number of FIFA's commercial partners at that World Cup. And I remember the concern expressed by those multinational companies spending millions of US dollars to bring people to the World Cup in 2010. And the only thing that gave them comfort was the fact that 32 teams came to South Africa from 32 countries. And therefore, those 32 countries' intelligence agencies were feeding information into our intelligence services about those who should not travel, so-called hardcore football hooligans who are nothing other than organized criminals. Because our intelligence services were not capable of doing that. Because think about what 2010's era was. It was right over 2008, all the shenanigans that were going down there. And the intelligence services' eyes were right off the ball, no pun intended, since it was the 2010 Soccer World Cup. They were too busy worrying about the empire building and whose faction within the ANC as the elective machinery for just the heads of that party was unfolding. So we had to rely then on foreign intelligence, by and large, to provide that kind of information. So we can't afford to have that, Chris. We need those, that echelon of leadership, to have their eye only on the ball, not worrying about, you know, who's going to get bail and who. Yesterday, I spoke to one of my people down in the Eastern Cape somewhere who was telling me that they just arrested a brigadier for corruption. A brigadier. You know, you would expect that lower levels of cops are those that are involved in being bribed. This was a brigadier taking bribes from criminals. And fortunately, the Hawks had stepped in and they were able to make an arrest. So until we see that happening, arrest, prosecution, conviction, and sentencing, sadly have to say, Chris, I don't know how much of this is going to change.
Just for the record, the judge denied that he was the one who received a bribe. So he has asked to go to the Matlanga Commission to give his side of the story. So undoubtedly we will hear that. Meanwhile, let's talk about the cat with the proverbial nine lives, Cat Matlala. His name is popping up everywhere. Apparently, he was even asked to raise funds to help the presidential or deputy presidential campaign for Matunu.
Well, you see, that's the problem, Chris. A lot has been said about the patronage network. A lot has been said about funding. I was listening again to a podcast today on that. In fact, it was an interview with Mandy Wiener on her new book, The Deal, about the GNU. And she was saying that when the negotiations came up for cabinet positions, the one that the ANC the most vehemently rejected going to any other party was Durko because of the foreign funding. You know, when the patronage network is not just local, it's foreign as well. And when you're getting government tenders being used as funding, and as backhanded bribes. So you issue a tender, the government official responsible for putting out the tender and awarding it gets paid, but so does the political party get paid. So the money goes into both coffers. I don't think that we'll ever stop that unless that mechanism has been removed. Mm. And this guy does seem to have those nine lives. He's the one driving around in the You know, maybe we should rename the Matlanga Commission to the Sandton Mansion, the Sandhurst Mansion Commission, because he's got a mansion there. Mokgosi's got a mansion there. Even Malema's got a mansion there. And maybe he's the next one that must go and explain how he has. How did these people justify on the salaries that they earn or the businesses that they belong to these massive earning abilities other than through organized crime? So SARS needs to get involved. With the lifestyle audits. And again, I repeat, justice needs to be seen to be being observed. We as citizens need to see people going to jail and that money being paid back once those assets are sold.
I don't know about you, Rory, but when they raided General Sabir's house, I was astonished at when the camera started panning at the size of that property.
And even the one that's being built currently for a police commissioner here in Gauteng. So why aren't those questions being asked, whether it's by the asset forfeiture unit or the lifestyle audit component of SARS or whomever? Somebody needs to be asking the questions, how are you affording this? Mm. I mean, that's a very, very easy way for somebody to understand whether or not the person's eye is on the ball. Because if they're doing their job and earning their monthly salary and nothing more, then how are they affording that stuff?
Can you imagine how powerful Cat Matlala must not be and how powerful he would have become if he had a national commissioner and a president in his pocket?
Absolutely. It reminds me of back in the cricket corruption scandals also of the early 2000s. If the bookmakers have got the captain in their pocket, there's so much more that they can do to influence what happens on the cricket field. And I mean, imagine if you had the president and the police commissioner. I mean, it'll be even better than the Guptas.
Exactly. Well, he's now also trying to get bail because he's facing an attempted murder charge of an ex-mistress.
You know, not unrelated to this as yet.
Completely unrelated.
Can't give him bail, surely, because then, you know, it just continues.
Now, Rory, would anybody be surprised, though, at this stage if he got bail? Perhaps there's just too much heat on at the moment.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think that that's the, you know, that's not the major problem that we're facing. I think we are facing an emasculated NPA that severely needs bolstering. And I think that we need courage and the political will right at the top to enact, it requires emergency legislation at some point, Chris. Maybe we wait until these two hearings and any subsequent hearings that come out of them, you know, have run their course. But then somebody like the head of the NPA, the head of SARS, needs to sit and construct a plan that looks at how we address consequence management for these people that are found guilty. And if it means the restructuring and the bolstering of the NPA, then let's do that. There's sufficient expertise out there. I don't think we can sit and wait now, you know, for government departments to decide the NPA needs resources. Put it in the hands of the private sector. There's enough legal expertise out there. Put it in the hands even possibly of private investigators, such as was suggested. We heard a former minister, Gaele, saying that he was actually going to tell the president that he supported private prosecution. There's sufficient precedence there. You know, and the money that is wasted on all of this patronage could be put towards paying competent people to assist the NPA. So that's my possibly pie-in-the-sky, rose-colored, tinted solution. But I think it calls for bravery and emergency legislation so that we completely remove the rot and remove the opportunity for any more rot to be established or to be continued by having, you know, what I said. Do not allow any of those services to have any affinity with the government at all. Mm-hmm. They must be completely independent. And if they're not prepared to say that when they swear the oath of office, then they may not serve in those capacities. You may not be a cop if you are going to show a political affiliation. You need to serve the government of the day, and the government of the day is to be seen by those police officers as having been elected by all of us. So essentially, as a police officer, you serve the people of South Africa by upholding the law.
Rory, I forgot to mention this to you as a security expert. Did you see that CAT recruited 23 of his own security personnel from SANDF Special Task Force?
So I would really like to interrogate that, Chris, because what you must remember is that if anybody, any citizen is protected by a private entity, then that private entity needs to have licensed firearms that it must issue to those people protecting. So right now, as I sit here in my company, if you hire me to provide you with a protection officer, Chris, my company has to provide that person with a firearm, and there are strict regulatory requirements as to how that firearm is issued. And the person who protects you has got to have certain qualifications, one of which is the use of firearm for business purposes. He's got to have a competency certificate. And I've got to comply with all of that to provide somebody to protect you. So if Kat Matlala is hiring these former SANDF, how is he doing that? Does he have a registered security company that has the ability to issue those firearms and to hire those people? Otherwise, he's committing an offense. The people that he's hiring are guilty of an offense. And the company, whoever they are hired through, is guilty of an offense. So that needs to be interrogated. Otherwise, it's just another one of these things where, because it's been signed off at some senior level, it's okay, but the rest of us must all comply. Absolute nonsense.
As far as I know, he has a security company, but he clearly needed a lot of protection himself on a personal level, Rory.
And he can clearly afford it.
His relationship with General Sabia also kept popping up with allegations that the general received payments from him after he got a police contract, and that the general influenced him to make a statement saying his Rolex and his wife's jewelry had been stolen by the cops so that General Dumisani Khumalo could get arrested.
My word.
That's allegations being made at these hearings.
By the way, Chris, do we know whether General Khumalo will return to the Madlanga Commission and continue his testimony?
I don't know, Rory. And his sudden illness was incredibly suspicious. There was speculation that he had been poisoned, but I haven't heard anything more. That was really abrupt, you know. Just when
it was abrupt.
His testimony was reaching its peak, suddenly he felt too ill to testify.
But we were all sitting on tenterhooks waiting for the next chapter, and then it never arrived. Yeah, so I wish him well. I hope that I certainly hope he wasn't poisoned, but I certainly hope that we get to hear what he has to say as he either supports or refutes what General Mkhwanazi has to say, because we need corroboration for that stuff, you know. And similarly, the withdrawal of General Mkhwanazi's, some of the stuff that he said regarding former Minister Begitele is equally puzzling. And I'm hoping that the reason he walked that back was because it would affect current investigations and not because of some or other political pressure put on him. But the lucky Mkhwanazi that I know, who doesn't easily take pressure and, do things like that for no reason at all. So let's hope that the reasons for that have got to do with the investigation, the ongoing investigation. Let's hope the investigation is done properly and reaches the right conclusion and that people are arrested, prosecuted, sentenced, and convicted and sentenced. That's what we need, Chris.
Talking about the KZN General, Rory, just one last thing. Somebody was saying to me that the current police minister was going to be or had been advised not to renew the general's contract. And somebody else remarked, well, if they want to start a revolution, the general has the public's backing.
Yeah, he does. And I think he's largely got the backing of the cops I'm glad you reminded me, because I actually wanted to come to this earlier, Chris, and I went off at a tangent. You see, when you talk about a demoralized police service, one of the reasons for that is that members, and I'm talking about constables and sergeants and even inspectors on that, or warrant officers now, on the ground need to know that they are supported by their cops, by their commanders. They need to have confidence and faith in their commanders. And we saw with that Mampara Riapuyega what happens when you parachute a completely incompetent and politically compromised person into those leads. The members on the ground sit and look at this and say, what is she doing there? Whereas with a Lucky Mkhwanazi, they say, we'll have him any day because he's got our backs. And that's why the revolution will come, not just from the farming community and the business fraternity in that province, but it'll come from the members on the ground. They want a commander that they can look up to and that they know has got their back. And my point was, Chris, that what we really need is no more Riapuyegas. We need more Mkhwanazis. And by that, I mean career cops that have come through the ranks, somebody who started walking the beat with a baton and a 9mm, and then progressed through into a sergeant, maybe commanded a shift. Then he became an inspector and he might have had, a wider command, and he might even have had some administrative responsibilities. And then he became an officer and he commanded a unit or a station or a whatever. And he knows what it takes. He knows what happens where the rubber hits the road, where that thin blue line confronts crime. And that person then progresses up until you get an Mkhwanazi as provincial commissioner of KZN. That is what we need, not these politicians. We don't need politicians in the police, and hence my view that what we possibly need is special legislation that denies any police officer a political affiliation.
That sounds like a great solution, Rory. Thank you very, very much for coming on the NDB Sunday Show with me, Chris Steyn, today.
You're so welcome, Chris, and good evening to all of our listeners and viewers.